Good morning. My name is Brian. If I haven't gotten a chance to meet you, I'm very glad that you're worshiping with us today. I'm going to be preaching, obviously, early in the service today. We're doing this throughout this series to give you ample time to respond at the end. For those of you who've not been here, maybe this is your first Sunday with us, we're in a series called American Idols. And what we're doing is we're looking at common idols that we struggle with here in America. And I want to talk to you about an idol this morning that not only does it run pretty wide and pretty broad, but the idol I'm going to talk to you about today, it also runs very, very deep. And I want to read to you a description of this idol that I think is going to help kind of frame what we're going to be talking about today. I want you to hear this. It says, indulge. It's time to put pleasure back in living. Satisfy your appetite. Leave guilt behind. Become a hedonist. Seek bliss at every turn. Succumb to temptation and revel in the feeling it gives you. A certain gratification accompanied by a cushion of contentment. Now, you may think that this description is from some kind of porn site or some kind of illicit group. But this description that is given here was actually from a Neiman Marcus clothing ad. And what's being communicated through this clothing ad is that you should seek and find pleasure through what you wear. Here's a regular message that you're going to receive as soon as you walk out of the doors of this place. That you should seek and find pleasure through not only what you wear, but what you drive, what you own, what you watch, what you consume. There's a steady message spoken into our lives that says we should seek and pursue and find pleasure. And so consequently, what has happened is this pleasure has become an idol that has captivated the hearts of many, many people. To the point now that if you go through the mall and you see Abercrombie and Fitch, they're selling sex just as much as they're selling clothes. If you see the Axe body spray commercials, you know that they're using this sex to basically try to sell their product, to move their product. And they don't do that because it's ineffective. They don't do that because they're just experimenting with something. They know that this ingrained desire for pleasure that God created but we have distorted and corrupted still sells every bit as much today as it did the day that we were born. And so consequently, what we have in kind of culture and society as a whole is this constant marketing of pleasure and this constant basically message that says we need to pursue this pleasure. Unfortunately, what we have are things like the Sandusky, Penn State, the Catholic Church. We have sex trafficking. We have sex abuse. We have marriages right now that are in torment and on the verge of being destroyed. We have all of these things that have come because of this idol of pleasure. This morning, I want to talk to you about this idol of pleasure. And some of you, you may think of, and I would normally do this, we would define the idol of pleasure just in terms of sexual perversion. But when we talk about the idol of pleasure, it's also going to include things that could be any kind of a substance, whether it's something that you consume, food, drugs, alcohol, any of those things that have become an idol, that have become unmanageable, that God may have created to be a good thing, but they've become a God thing. And so you no longer have control over those things. Rather, those things have control over you. All of those things can be means by which you bow down your life to the idol of pleasure. And I mean to share this with you going in. It's always a kind of a struggle, and the tendency is for me to want to sort of dance around the subject and speak softly about it. But I'm coming to you this morning, I'm going to say, I just want to lay out what the scriptures teach about this area. I'm going to be frank about it. I'm going to be open, honest about it. And I believe this, that it's time for people within the church to understand. We can no longer assume that this is a struggle that other people have. It's time that we in the church understand that we struggle with this. That there are people in these seats right now who struggle with this. So consequently, we can no longer say, Let's let the culture determine the nature of this conversation. Let's let them define the terms. Let's let them do all the talking about this. It's time for us as followers of Jesus. And if you're not a follower of Jesus here, we are glad that you're here. We're glad that you're on the journey. But we're coming today and we're saying that it's time for us to speak specifically to this issue because it is wrecking and it is ruining lives. And what I want to share with you on the front end of this is that whatever your struggle, the idol of pleasure is, for me in the past, it's been pornography. I'm standing up here today and telling you that you don't have to stay where you are. I'm telling you that there is a way out. There is a way forward. Now, there's some of you here, you're probably going to identify with this description. This is from a group called Sexaholics Anonymous. And for those of you who maybe struggle with these terms, we've got to be real. We've got to be frank about this. So here's this description that's given. I want you to see if you relate to this. They say, from the earliest days of our disease, we thought lust, and you may substitute food, drugs, alcohol, anything that you turn to for your source of provision, anything that has become unmanageable, anything that has become your God, your idol. We thought that lust, food, drugs, alcohol, was our friend. We used it for many reasons. Entertainment as a refuge from pain or to escape dealing with problems. Somewhere along the way, we realized that lust had become a bigger problem than the problems we were trying to avoid. And some of you will identify with prescription drugs. You'll identify with alcohol. You'll identify with some form of pleasure that the very source that you thought was your solution has now become the problem. They go on, they say, we realized that it had become a bigger problem than the problems we were trying to avoid. The medicine became our poison. Our solution became the problem. We were out of control. And I would go on to say that if you have an idol of pleasure, and substance abuse is something that you struggle with in some form, you probably have a string of broken promises. That right this very minute, your life is being negatively affected because you've said, I'll never do it again. I promise. That was the last time. I won't watch it again. I won't drink it again. I won't consume it again. It's not going to happen again. But yet, the very next day, you find yourself gravitating and being drawn back to the very thing that the night before, the day before, you swore you would never do again. And so right now, your lives relationally, kind of interrelationally, they're being wrecked, they're being devastated, they're being destroyed. And if we could just be honest about this, if your struggle, the idol of pleasure that you struggle with, has in some ways to do with sexual perversion or dysfunction, I would venture to say this, that if you're a single person right now, you're not only poisoning your mind and poisoning what you think sex, which God created to be a good thing, is. You're not only poisoning that now, but you're poisoning your future relationship on the day that you do become married. If you're a married person and you're engaging in that right now, you are poisoning the intimacy that God desires for you to have with the one person, which is your spouse. And so there's this toxic effect. And so we are coming together this morning and we're saying, what does the Bible teach us about this? We understand that the culture has it jacked up. We understand that there has to be a better way because we look at the destruction, we look at the ruin, we look at the devastation that's taking place. What can the scriptures teach us that will help us get to the core of the issue and then overcome? If you'll open up with me to Romans chapter 1. In Romans chapter 1, we're going to get to the heart of the matter. The heart of this issue of the idol of pleasure. And in getting to the heart of the matter, the heart of the issue, we're going to see how it is that we not just remove the idol of pleasure, but we replace the idol of pleasure. Now, we're going to look in verses 18 through 32, but I want to do something different. I want us to begin in verse 24. We're going to go in verses 24 on down, and then we're going to move back up to verse 18, and I'll explain why in just a moment. In verse 18 of this chapter, Paul begins to say that the wrath of God is being revealed. It's present tense. It's being revealed. And in verses 24 and following, he begins to give us a picture of what God's wrath looks like in action. If we were to state this, it's basically Paul saying, here's how God's wrath is being revealed currently. And notice with me that it's not in the form of fire and brimstone. It's not in the form of hell coming to earth, literally. The wrath of God being revealed is explained in verse 24, and I want you to see the connection between this and the idol of pleasure. So verse 24 begin. It says, therefore God, and we'll get to therefore in a moment, God gave them over, speaking to mankind in general, gave them over. And we'll see this phrase, gave them over, used three times in the following verses. Gave them over to what? It says, it gave them over in the lust of their hearts to impurity so that their bodies would be dishonored among them. Most likely what's in view here in verse 24 is heterosexual perversion. Some kind of perhaps cultic prostitution. We can't know exactly what's in view, but it's this idea that the standard that God has established through the gospel, we find in verse 16, there's been a deviation from that standard. And the core definition of something that is perverted is when you have a standard that is established and you deviate from that standard. Once you deviate from that standard, the scriptures would say that is a perversion. So we tend to think of perversion in terms of homosexuality. What this scripture would help us to understand is that perversion is not just something that has to do with homosexuality. Perversion has to do with something that it's heterosexuality when we pervert it, distort it, when we deviate from the standard that God has established. And it's probably easy for many of you, perhaps easy for me, to say, well, those gays, you know, those homosexuals, boy, they sure are perverted. No, folks, understand, perversion is anytime we deviate from the norm, anytime we deviate from the standard. And so he kind of lays out there that this is a form of perversion here amongst heterosexuals. And I think this, as I read this passage, if we're ever going to have the moral integrity and the moral character and authority to speak to the perversion of homosexuality, which we love to do, we boycott, we, you know, form banners and lines and say, whoa, that's terrible. It just seems like a really good idea for us to first figure out how to get heterosexuality correct. And you know, when we have adultery and when we have fornication, when we have pornography and when we have all of these things going on within the church, it really seems to limit our ability to speak to any issue outside of that. So Paul teaches us already, we're seeing here, that there is this the manner in which we are given over, God's wrath is being revealed, and the way it's being revealed is by God basically saying to us, here you go. This is what you wanted, this is what you hoped for, okay, you can have it. But it continues. And notice that the deviation from the standard does not begin. It's not like it flatlines and we move partially away from God's standard and we never move further. Notice in verses 26 and following how there's this degenerating effect. That once we begin to move away from the standard, once we begin to move away from the norm, it's like a snowball effect. And it's not as if we move so far from the standard and now we don't have to worry about moving any further. Look at this. Verse 26, for this reason God, again this phrase, gave them over, second time it's used here, to degrading passions. What does that look like? For their women exchanged the natural function for that which is unnatural. And in the same way also the men abandoned the natural function of the woman and burned in their desire toward one another. Men with men committing indecent acts and receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error. Grab on to this. We see that the beginning of when we deviate from the standard is this kind of heterosexual perversion, but it doesn't stop there. There is a degenerating effect, and it becomes even more perverse. We move even further from the standard, which is a man and a woman. We move further from the standard, and now women are burning in lust for other women. Men are burning in lust with other men. Was this written yesterday? That this is a timeless pattern. This is a timeless principle. And we see right here, and by the way, I'm not going to spend much time to even justify this idea, but some people would say about this passage, well, really what Paul's teaching there is if you love your woman and you love another woman, it would be wrong for you to marry a man. That's a jacked up interpretation. The clear interpretation of this is that this is a further degrading, okay? This is a further moving away from the standard that God has established. So we see this. God has given them over. In verse 28, we see that God continues to give them over, not just physically as he has in verses 24 through 27, but now mentally. You look with him in verse 28, he says, "And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind." And what follows in verses 28 through 32 is that Paul lists 24 sins. And if you read these sins, there's not a person here who's not affected in some way, or influenced, or who practices some of these. Which is why Paul goes on in chapter 2, verses 1 and following, and lets us know that we have no basis to judge someone else, because we ourselves, in some ways, have deviated from the standard. But get this, that there is this steady progression, or we might say this steady regression or digression, away from the standard. So that shows us what God's wrath looks like in action, how it is that it's actually displayed, which raises this question. And I know at this point this may seem kind of theoretical, but we're going to get grounded here and understand the root of the issue. We now need to ask the question, okay, if this is what God's wrath looks like, him delivering us over, handing us over, and what we see in culture today is God giving over mankind in some ways to receive the own due, their own due penalty of their sins, we have to ask a question, why? Why would God hand someone over? Really, does that strike you as a bit strange? Why would God say, okay, here you go. You want this path, you want this route, okay, take that. Why would God do that? And it's in understanding why God does that that we begin to understand the very root and the very heart of this idol of pleasure. In verse 16, as I mentioned a moment ago, God establishes a standard. He said that this standard is revealed through the righteousness that we find in the gospel. In verse 18, He begins and he says, "For the wrath of God is," literally, present tense, "it's being revealed." So connect verse 16 to verse 18. Verse 16, the standard is revealed through the gospel. Verse 18, God's wrath is being revealed because the standard has broken. And when we get down to verse 21, we see it's the core issue at stake. It's the core problem that Paul is addressing in the church in Rome, and I think a core problem that he would address in ours as well. Look with me in verse 21. This is the core. This is why God hands over. This is why we see the immorality. This is why we have the idol of pleasure. It's right here in verses 21 through 23. "For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools." Get this. Here it is, verse 23. Here's the core. "And they exchanged." They exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man, and of birds, and four-footed animals, and crawling creatures. Paul is teaching here that idolatry, the exchange, the shoving God aside and replacing him in that vacuum with something else, something that is created. He's teaching us that idolatry is the cause in verses 18 through 23, and immorality is the consequence. And this is vitally important to understand, because if we try to fix the immorality, we are, as one man has said, we are hacking away at the branches of evil, and we are leaving the root intact. The root issue of immorality is not the act itself. Be more specific. The root issue of the idol of pleasure is not the idol of pleasure itself. It is the idolatry that led to us having the idol of pleasure. Picture it in some ways like this. God is to be the center of our lives. Jesus Christ is to be the center of our lives. When we exchange him with something else, we're basically saying we're taking a good thing and we're making it a God thing. Say the issue of sex. God created that to be good. He created it to be fun. He created it to be wholesome, you know, within the context of a man and a woman. But when we say, okay, I'm going to take a good thing and I'm going to distort it, I'm going to deviate from the norm, deviate from the standard, what we're basically saying is, okay, God, we're going to now take you and move you out of the center. So God, you move back here. And we're placing our way in the middle. We're taking a good thing and we're elevating it to a God thing because we find more meaning, we find more satisfaction in that thing than we do in you and walking in your ways. And when we do that, whether your perversion is with heterosexuality or homosexuality, whether you have the idol of pleasure of some kind of chemical addiction to prescription drugs or alcohol or whatever it is, the same principle is involved. The root issue is not physical. You follow? The root issue is not physical, and you'll be led to believe that it is. The root issue is spiritual. The root issue is not that you have somehow misplaced your values and you've made poor choices and yeah, all of that is true. But the root issue is that you have misplaced your worship. The root issue is that you have said, okay, God, I'm going to take you and I'm going to replace you with something better. I'm going to put you to the side so that I can pursue and kind of be ego-centered as opposed to God-centered here. I'm going to put my way and my will at the center and do whatever it is that I feel like I need for my life. That's the root. It's idolatry that is the cause, and immorality is the consequence. Now, you remember, why are you going to such lengths to point that out? I'd be willing to bet here's what some of you have done or are doing to overcome the idol of pleasure in your life. You're basically, if you were to picture this like you get a flat tire on a vehicle. And you get out there and you have your pump and man, you're pumping, you're using your willpower and you're saying, I'm not going to watch that again. I'm not going to take that again. I'm going to throw the bottle away. I'm going to throw the pills away. I'm going to throw the magazine away. I'm going to get rid of that. Man, you're pumping and you're shooting the air. You're shooting the air into that tire, hoping you're going to fill it up. Because man, you're working at it, you're striving at it. God knows how hard you're trying. You know, you're doing your very best to overcome this thing, to air that tire up so you can get on the road back to life. But if you only focus on the consequence and not the cause, here's what you're doing. You're pumping air into a leaky tire. You're pumping air into a tire that has been slashed open. And all of your efforts that you expend are going to be to treat the consequence, not the cause. And so, translate this, make this very practical. You can try, you can muster up your willpower, you can muster up your energy, you can say, I promise I'm not going to do it again. You could go through all those things. But until you understand that this is not just a physical issue, it's a spiritual issue. It's an issue of misplaced worship. It's what happens necessarily when we distort the standard, when we place God in some kind of subordinate role in our lives. We have to understand that if we are going to get to the cause is idolatry. Which I think we would have to ask the question, okay, then what is the way forward? As we look at what Paul teaches us here, we see very clearly that the root issue is what we've said before is idolatry. Now, and some of you are probably, in your minds right now, you may be challenging what I'm saying just a little bit. You're saying, well, yeah, okay, maybe it seems like there's some spiritual component to it, but at root, this is a chemical thing, isn't it? I mean, if you'll be honest with me, that's okay. It's okay if you're pushing back a little in your minds and saying, well, you know, okay, I see the spiritual element, but at root, this is a physical thing. You know, if I have a problem with something, I can take a pill and fix that, and I hear you. I want you to hear what one group says about this. And this group, they don't base anything that they do off the authority of the scriptures. They're many ways a secular group. They're called Alcoholics Anonymous. And their focus at Alcoholics Anonymous is not to turn people into Jesus lovers. They just want to get people sober. They don't have a God agenda, okay? They're, in some ways, they're not like me up here. But here's what they have to say about the recovery process. In their 12 steps, the first step that they say you have to acknowledge is that you're powerless. You can't do this on your own. It has power over you. But I want you to hear the second step that they say you have to acknowledge. It's this. We came to believe that a power, uppercase P, greater than ourselves, could restore us to sanity. The third step, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. It's a secular group. Does it sound like they're defining alcoholism in terms of just a physical problem? Well, they understand that at core, at root, this is ultimately a spiritual problem. Number five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Number six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Number seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Number 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for His will, for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Number 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. You get this? The one group that has helped more people probably than any other on the face of this planet to overcome this idol of pleasure, they understand that at root this is not just a physical thing. This is a spiritual thing. And the key reason you need to understand that is because if you continue to believe that what you're going through is a spiritual thing, you'll continue to rely on the strength that you have and you'll never tap into the resurrection power of Jesus Christ that He has. And so for some of you today, you need to in your heart and mind transition from this approach that says, I can do this, I just have to try harder. I can do this, I just have to be more committed. I can do this, I just have to monitor myself in a few more areas. And you need to understand that no, you cannot. That this is a spiritual issue. Idolatry is the cause. Immorality is just the consequence. There was an experiment done a number of years ago in this field of psychology where they took some dogs. They put them in, and I'm sorry if you love animals here, this may be a little troublesome for you, but they took these dogs, and as they often have done in experiments, they worked with them before they worked with people, and they put shock collars around the dogs. They put them into an environment, and they administered a shock. And the interesting thing about this environment they put them in is that no matter what the dogs did, they crossed the line, jumped a fence, hit a button, no matter what it is, pawed at the fence, they continued to receive this shock. So no matter what they did, the dogs had to just eventually accept that no matter what I do, I have to accept what's being given to me. No matter what I do, no matter how hard I run, no matter how hard I bark, regardless what I do, I'm always going to be a dog that gets shocked. They took the same group of dogs, changed them, put them into a different environment where now they could control the shock through crossing a barrier or pawing at a button, you know, some kind of controlled environment. And what they found is that the group of dogs who had been conditioned to believe that regardless what they do, they're always going to be as they are. You know what those dogs did? They just sat passively and accepted what it was that was being given to them. Interestingly enough, they came later to do the same experiment with humans, not shocking them with collars, but in a different environment, exposing them to this annoying noise. They took humans and put them into one group, and no matter what they did, wave their hands, jump around, hit buttons, you name it, no matter what they did, they just continued to hear this annoying noise. They took that same group of humans, they put them into an environment where they could control. They put them into an environment where they could have power over whatever it was that they were receiving. You know what those humans did? They sat there and passively accepted. Why? Because they had come to believe that no matter what they did, there was no hope. They had come to believe that no matter how hard they worked, no matter how hard they tried, there just wasn't anything that they could do to overcome their circumstances. My guess is here's where many of you live today. You live with a sense of what they would call learned helplessness. No matter what you do, no matter what you try, no matter how hard you pray, things for you are always going to be as they always have been. And whatever idol of pleasure you have, an addiction to porn, an addiction to some kind of sexual dysfunction, some kind of an addiction to, you know, pills or drugs or alcohol or whatever it is, it's just that's how it's going to be. And consequently, many of you, the hope that God has desired to give you has been taken from you. And I want to stand up here and tell you today that it is time for you to realize that through the death of Jesus Christ and His resurrection that raised Him up from the grave, you no longer have to passively accept what's being given to you. You no longer have to say, this is my lot in life. I'm always going to be defeated. I'm always going to be a victim. There's nothing that I can do to control my environment. When Jesus Christ died on the cross, He canceled the debt. He crushed the sin. He turned you into a new creation. And as a new creation, a new creature in Christ, you now have a new ability that you never had before. You now are a new person. You have a new identity. And so for you to believe that I've always been addicted to porn, for you to believe that I've always been addicted to alcohol, for you to believe that I've always been addicted to prescription drugs, for you to believe that I've always been addicted to food, is for you to believe a lie that you have to receive whatever the enemy places into your life. And I'm just one man, but I'm coming to you and I'm telling you on the authority of that book and on the authority of the resurrection power of Jesus Christ, I'm coming to you and say that's a lie. I'm coming to you and telling you that you don't have to continue to accept whatever it is that the enemy has placed into your life. I'm coming to you and saying to you that you can, through the power of Jesus Christ, overcome this. Now, I'm not trying to be simplistic here. I'm not trying to say, you just say a prayer and God will get done with it and you don't ever have to worry about it again. It is a struggle. It is a battle. And you better be ready for it. But I'm coming today and telling you that you can overcome. You can conquer through the blood, through the resurrection power of Jesus Christ. If we don't have this, I'm wondering, are you with me today? Are you awake with me today? If we don't have this, what good is this thing that we do when we come together? If this doesn't work to help us overcome even the things that we struggle with, then why do we come? See, I'm coming to you and I'm telling you today that God can so work in your life to help you become a victor, not a victim. And this is not soft-pedaling, health, wealth type stuff. This is the straight truth of the Scriptures. That God has changed your identity. He has created you to be a new person who you live from that new sense of who you are. Now, the real question comes down to this. Are you at a place where you say, I will do whatever I need to do to overcome this? Because here's what I've kind of accepted going in. There are a lot of you who you're going to hear what I'm talking about today. It sounds good. It sounds appealing. Oh gosh, I want victory. But there's one thing that will keep you from taking the most important step toward it. Do you want to know what that one thing is? It's pride. Your pride will keep you from taking the step that you need to take toward a life of recovery, toward a life of what God has intended for you. And let me just explain it very quickly like this. For some of you say, I've prayed to Jesus. I've asked Him to take this away. You know, I've pleaded, I've begged, I've cried, I've sought. You know, I've prayed to Jesus. I want Him to be the center of my life. But the real test, whether or not you can evaluate if you have truly put Jesus Christ at the center of your life, is if you have taken a step back and you have said, God, I don't care about this image. I don't care about my reputation. I don't care about what people think of me. I'm okay with humbling myself, and I'm okay with people knowing that I struggle with porn. I'm okay with people knowing that I've struggled with prescription drugs. I'm okay with people knowing that deep down I'm an alcoholic. You have to get to a place where you say, the primary goal in my life is not to protect my ego. It's not to focus on self-preservation. You're literally at a place where you are poor in spirit, where Jesus talks in the Beatitudes, where you say, it doesn't matter what people think of me. I don't care. I just know I want Jesus. I want His best for my life. And I'm just telling you, you do what you want to with this. Until you get there, you're never going to overcome. Until you get there, you're going to continue to dabble and you're going to continue to try and you're going to continue to pump, work hard, muster up your willpower, but you're never going to have the ability to overcome. Because the means by which God brings transformation and brings this overcoming power in our lives is the means of confession, honesty, accountability. Where not only do you open up the closet of your heart to God your Father, but you open up the closet of your heart and all the dirt, all the dark, all the secrets that you keep hidden are now exposed to the light of another trustworthy believer. And so this morning, as you think about how this applies to your life, there are some things that some of you are going to need to do that are just common sense. You're going to need to eliminate the option so that you can eliminate the temptation. Quit making excuses. Quit saying, well, I struggle with porn, I'm addicted to porn, my wife hates it, you know, my parents know about it now, but I have to have the internet for school. Listen to me, go to a library. You know, put something on your computer that's going to take care of that. Do something. But would you please stop mocking the situation, and would you please quit making excuses for your behavior and expecting somebody else to take responsibility for you when God has put squarely on your shoulders to take responsibility for your behavior. And as long as you live with this idea that you can excuse it, and, well, it's just natural, I just have these tendencies and I don't know what I can do, you're just like that dog that sits there passively accepting what the enemy has given to you, and you're not moving into what God has in store for you. So quit making excuses. Literally, and I'm not using this as an overstatement, if it meant that you took a baseball bat to every computer in your home, because in your home that was a source of pornography moving into the lives of the people there, that would be one of the best investments you have ever made into the eternity of your family. And we have to get rid of this notion that we need these certain things, when in reality those things ultimately become excuses for us to engage in the very behavior that's keeping us from the life that God wants for us to have. And if we truly want freedom, if we truly want victory, if we truly want deliverance, no longer can we say, I'm just going to excuse my behavior. And I'm going to continue to leave the option open. And I'm just telling you, you do what you want to with this. But if you continue to leave the option open, you're going to continue to leave the temptation open. And if you want to stamp on this thing, you'd better eliminate the option in order to eliminate the temptation. If you don't, just forget about it. But the key thing I'm going to call upon you today and ask you to do is not just to do those practical, those things that just make sense. I'm going to ask you today, if you are truly at a place where you say, I'm sick of this, I want something different, I know that I'm addicted, I know that this is an idol, I know that I've bowed down to it, I'm going to ask you to confess, to shine the light of God's grace by confessing to Him and another trustworthy believer. And I've seen this happen so many times, that it's in that act of confession, not just to your Father in heaven, but He also tells us to confess our sins to one another, James 5. It's in that act of confession that this power to break the hold really begins to manifest itself. And understand this. This is not a one-time thing. This is you saying, I'm ready to join the battle. I am ready to move in and make war on this thing that is warring against me and my soul. And I'm not just going to do this one time. I'm going to make this a practice. This is going to become a lifestyle for me, where I'm no longer going to hide the things that keep me from the future that God has in store for me. This, brothers and sisters, this is how we get to the core. This is how we get to the cause, which is idolatry. It's in frankly and in some ways in this dramatic fashion addressing what it is that's going on deep within our hearts. So I leave this with you. Do you want to overcome? Do you want to say, I want to begin leaving these things behind? Then here's what you're going to have to do. If you don't trust me, you don't believe me, okay, just do what you want. But I'm telling you, here's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to confess this to your Father, which many of you have probably done. You may have begged, you may have pleaded, but you're also going to have to get your heart right with another trustworthy believer. You're going to have to break down. You're going to have to swallow your pride. You're going to have to say that my sobriety with alcohol, with porn, with pills, with whatever it is more important than my pride. It's more important than my image. It's more important than my reputation. And if you don't take that step, I could count to you a number of people who I've watched through this pattern time and time and time again, they've come to me in tears. They've come broken. They've come saying, I've got to do something about it. But yet they would not take the step to be humble and open enough to say, I need it. That they'll come and confess to a preacher because he won't share anything else, but they'll never humble themselves. And brother, sister, I'm praying and I'm hoping that today you're going to take the step where you say, I don't care. I need it. I need the healing. I need the help that God gives. Let's pray.